Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running the design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California, where it is in our third day of rain. We're all rejoicing. It's good.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz, and I'm in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Hey, thank you everybody for joining us, the Presentation Podcast. Nolan, Sandy, we have a great time just having a conversation about presentation design and design in general. This is kind of a unique recording because we have these wonderfully busy design studios. Our work and travel schedules this month, they're really not working out to do a recording that was timely. So we recorded this literally 3 weeks ahead of the release date. So we're kind of skipping the what's happening in our studio because what's happening then is not what's happening now, and it really didn't work. We'll get in sync on the next episode. Let's just jump ahead to news.
Well, Troy, before we do that, I did want to just give a shout out to Charles Stella, who I had drinks with last night. Charles is I think I met him in person this past year at the Presentation Summit. He's a great presentation designer, but he also lives in just the next town over, which is unusual since our community is spread out across the country. It's nice to have somebody in my backyard. So,
very cool.
It was good.
Hi, Charles.
Hi, Charles.
So we got to talk shop for a little bit just down the road.
So what about news?
News.
Industry news.
Okay, you know what? I feel we're part of the industry, so this is newsworthy to our podcast and appropriate actually to the conversation topic we're having this episode. Our last episode was the first time in 70 episodes, I will call out. I'll remind you, we've had 70 episodes up until the last time we had an upload error. Many of you know about it. Yes, in doing some last minute troubleshooting, specifically, I was kind of listening and trying to isolate some background noise. We had distractions. We had barking dogs, UPS deliveries, co-ringers ringing in and with a few quick questions. I mastered the final version that was uploaded with only my audio track active. Totally apology. First of all, I'm not that enamored with myself to only want to hear myself talking. Second, I didn't even know it was possible to do that. it was really awesome, actually. The morning the episode dropped, the morning it released, many people sent us quick emails. I got a couple of text messages saying something was not right with the podcast. Fortunately, I was able to figure things out, render a real version, which literally just meant going into Audition and unchecking a few buttons and hitting render, upload a new version, had it posted by 9 a.m. Pacific time zone. So most of you never even noticed. So maybe this is like bad news to bring it up. But if you're a Spotify listener in particular, well, we now know Spotify actually downloads their own version of each podcast, hosts on their servers. And even if we make a new version, it doesn't matter. They're still using the original version. So Spotify still has it wrong. Apologies for the technical glitch. If you missed episode 70, it is a conversation with Carrie Ruttenberg, an amazing trial lawyer that literally wrote the book on trial presentation graphics. It was a fantastic conversation. I personally made a lot of notes. Go back. It's available on iTunes. They just, pull it from our updated version. Go straight to the webpage. You can get it. It's a good one. It was a really, really good episode, but I do apologize. Personal news.
Or on iTunes. It's updated now.
It's everywhere, except for a few of the services that download it. But
I just thought you were doing a sort of a conceptual one-man show when I listened to it. And I was like, all right, we'll go with that.
Do we have any real industry news? What's presentation real news?
So we've already talked about this, that live transcription was coming natively to PowerPoint, but it's here. It arrived last week, I think, or earlier this week on Insider Fast for PC. on the Mac. It's coming soon, very soon, I believe. And I've been playing with it. So Troy, you, this is just to recap, this is now built into PowerPoint, a plugin that Microsoft had offered last year, which you've written a great blog post about, that allows you to, now with a click of a button within PowerPoint, to just have live subtitles or supertitles of what you're actually speaking. And I've been playing with it, and it's very cool. It keeps pinging the cloud and everything, so you have to be connected to the internet, but you can choose, you have to choose the language it should listen in. And then you also get to choose the language that the supertitles or subtitles appear in, and whether they're above or overlaid. And you have a whole bunch of options on that. So you can have live translation as well. So if you're speaking to a Catalan audience, for example, you just hit Catalan and, translates.
Did you experiment with that? The translation part?
Yeah, but I'm not, only my French is barely passable. So who knows how correct it is. And, my Cantonese is not that good. but I was playing with it, and I'm trying to figure out exactly how it works. In theory, it's supposed to look at your content for spelling. And so I put up a slide. I tweeted about this, and, it said, presentation by Nolan Hames in Schenectady, New York. And the first few times I went in a slideshow and did it, it kept interpreting Schenectady, because this is what I was speaking, as skin activity, which sounds fun, but not what I wanted. But by the fourth or fifth time I went into slideshow mode, it caught on, and I think it was looking at what was written on the slide. However, I could never get it to spell my last name correctly, which is not unusual, but my name was in the notes section, was on the title slide. It's in the authorship of the file. I'm again, not perfect, but very cool.
It's very cool. I don't have it yet. I don't have that update.
So it's a little confusing, because there's actually two types of transcription. I don't know how to define these, because I haven't really played with it. But there's two types of translations. There's one that interprets the content on your slide and will give a translation of it. That's the one I did a blog post on, and it does really good if it's bullet list driven content. As soon as you start doing more designy stuff where you have text boxes a little bit of everywhere, it gets a little funny how it starts to like layer things, what order it is put in. The other one is, as you speak it, it does a live translation of what the presenter is saying, and the two interact with each other. I don't know the degree of it, and that's the one I'm really interested in, because I'd love to actually see that tool, the one where, like right now, if I had PowerPoint and slideshow, it would actually put what we're saying on the screen.
Right. That's what this is. This is not Microsoft Translator. This is transcription.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Yeah, I want Translator. That's what it is. Perfect. Yes, the transcription one. And that's the one I actually want it to be not on the slide. I want to capture it into the presenter notes.
Oh, yes.
For later, or post-mortem review of a presentation.
Export.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, they're not built into it yet, just so people know, but I think there's a lot of room for this. I'm very excited to see your next March, when we're up at Microsoft. I think this will be a topic of conversation of where are you planning on going with this cool technology.
I was thinking about that just today, because I was putting together a little talk for the Presentation Guild, and I'm typing speaking notes, and I'm like, it'd be so much easier for me to just speak this.
Dictate them at that point.
Dictate. I mean, of course I could use Microsoft's, Max dictate thing, but it'd be nice if it was all just... If I could just put it in slideshow mode, talk, and boom, there are my speaker notes.
Yeah.
So I want to be clear on something. So I've used the add-in for translating,
right?
Which, when I have written text on the slide, put in the language and it converts it to whatever. Nolan, when you said this transcription translates, are you saying I'm speaking English on the screen, the transcription appears as Swedish?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
In real time. I mean, there's a lot. There's like the lag is basically like what you'll see on the closed captioning for the news.
Yeah.
So it's a second or a couple seconds.
I don't think it depends.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not instant, but it's pretty good. I mean,
we were all in
pretty excited, especially a first generation tool coming out. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we were in a meeting the other day, all three of us, and we were seeing it in live. happening. The speaker was presenting and we could see the transcription on the slide. I thought it worked really well.
Hey, so I got my next news thing. Actually, totally could have used this. This is only PowerPoint news because PowerPoint was one of the tools used. Have you guys read about, I don't know how to pronounce the last name, but it's Marcelo Bielsa?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's fun.
The spy presentation he did.
No, I don't know what it is.
Okay, so let me explain who he is, because I actually saw this headline, got very curious about it. He's the manager of Leeds United Football, or soccer. He's, you know, the team manager for, it's a West Yorkshire professional football, West Yorkshire, England professional football or soccer team. Huge news conference. And here's the PowerPoint connection. I'll just read this quote. During an extraordinary press conference lasting 70 minutes, during which Bielsa offered a PowerPoint presentation, there's our connection, detailing the level of opposition analysis to journalists, the coach said he had sent staff on covert reconnaissance missions to every rival's training base in the buildup to this meeting. He basically went out there and, you know, had people gathering intel on all the other teams out there. It's not illegal. There's a whole thing in the articles you read, like, this isn't actually against the rules. It's just kind of frowned upon. And he's building all these statistics so they could come up with their strategies. Very interesting. But he basically unveiled what he was doing. I don't follow football that closely to know why this is such a big deal, but it's pretty cool. But, you know, side note, the information, it was an information document. It was not a presentation. From what I saw, the slides, they are just massive amounts of statistics and data packed onto each slide. Most actually were, for this press conference, were just screen captures of Excel files. It's just basically stats on every player, I'm sure team plays, and a lot of things to be aware of as a coach, you know, so they can build up their strategies. There was one cool thing in the presentation. After a super heavy data amount of information, which I'm assuming was about a key player, they would then show video, which was embedded in the presentation, of like what it was they were analyzing. So yeah, I'll throw a link to it.
I mean, American football and baseball have done that for years, you know, analyzing video of opposition, you know, other pitchers.
But that's live games. This was watching them at their trainings, gameplay, which I think was, anyways, there you go. But you know what would have been really cool? Cause you know, the translation thing could have been really cool, cause they're trying to put this out to a global audience. There was, just trying to tie it all together.
You did. And you did a good job.
Yeah. If you want to see an ugly presentation, just go look at this thing. It's crazy. It's, you know, it's a document. Anyways,
Sandy, you got
presentation
anything?
In the news. PowerPoint.
Sure. It's new on the Office Insider page. I mean, on the Office Updates page, but it seems like we've been able to convert ink to text for a while, or maybe I was using some sort of workaround. But what's new is now PowerPoint Designer, which is, if you have Office 365 Designer, when you insert a picture, it'll automatically pop up with layout ideas on the task pane on the right side of the screen. But so what happens now is you convert it to text, and it incorporates that content into the design ideas and shows you photos and layouts.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I haven't actually played with that.
No, I haven't either. It's listed as new stuff. It's listed as new stuff. I don't have the most recent update, even though I am an Office Insider.
You know what? I have Designer turned off because until it rolls out being available to work with non-Microsoft templates, because Designer basically is a whole series of hand-created master layouts that are kind of hidden in the background that it applies to their templates. It's really smart. The artificial intelligence behind it, interpreting stuff like you said, is really good. But until it becomes available for, you know, templates we'd work on, the only time I use a Microsoft template is when I'm building a tutorial, to be honest. So I'm not going to experience it unless you tell me.
I don't use it either because it limits what you can do to it then.
Which is actually some of the cool stuff, how it locks stuff on slides. But yes.
Right. But if you're working in a template, that's not cool.
I've only used it once or twice, in a really quick way. I just needed something super quick. And I don't remember, but I may have even just done it and then rebuilt it myself. Just like, oh, that's a good idea. Great. You know, just slap the circle here.
Well, I have a link to this in the notes. I think it's worth looking at. What's really cool is it recognizes your copy and it makes a recommendation for imagery, if I understand correctly.
And I think one of the big takeaways is that the designer keeps developing.
Yes.
Yes.
And they keep making it better and fixing things and making it more user-friendly. So that's all good.
Absolutely.
During our recent Project Scope Creep episode, we talked briefly about revisions for a project and if they're included within the project scope and if the revisions are billable beyond the project scope. Well, today, what we're doing is we're diving into that one little comment and talking about what is a revision, how many revisions are included in a project agreement, is there a point of too many revisions, and how do revisions impact the project invoice? I also want to mention that this is not a presentation design specific conversation, as it applies to every design position I've held, and it's global to all designers. We are using examples that are presentation design projects, but we hope this episode is shared with designers everywhere.
So let's start with this. What is considered a revision request, or is there a set number of revisions in a project? Let's define revision.
Definition time. A revision is any request. Okay, for me, I should say. A revision is any request once the design on a project has begun. So we've gotten all of our parameters and we're into the design mode and the client comes in and says, hey, I want to do this. Or, hey, I'm looking over your proof. This is something I want to, you know, have done, or things that need to be changed. There's a little bit, to me, kind of a thin line when it is updates or new content to a section of a presentation that we've not actually looked at. So, you know, it might be adding in additional information before we've actually started the design of that area. Is that a revision or not a revision? Sometimes that gets a little bit more delicate on deciding what to do with it. There's mine.
I mean, that definition works for me, but you're right. Clients, I would add that it's a major request or a set of requests. I mean, if the client sends over content and then the next day they send a slightly reworded first page, I'm not going to ding them and say that's your first revision. And certainly, you know, smaller things, that's where clients can start to argue.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I would go further to define rounds of revisions versus individual revisions. We expect and plan for these rounds, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So that, and then, but individual revisions may or may not fall in out of scope.
Yes.
Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, I think so. And again, I like to think of it as a major coordinated, gathered set of comments, you know, changes or whatever to apply to the project. So, but Sandy, going back to your question, mm-hmm. Do we each have a preset number of revisions included in an agreement, or is it unlimited revisions until a client is happy? For me, it sort of totally depends on whether I'm working on a defined project scope and contract or just hourly. We've talked about that in the past. I work on both. When we're trying to decide that with a client up front, I'll tell them, hey, if we're working hourly, we'll make unlimited revisions. We'll keep making design changes and, you know, for however long as you want.
And we'll keep charging you. For that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because okay. We're on the clock. So it kind of puts it in their court. So as, you know, the subtext is that it's up to them to control costs. But if we do a defined contract, that will mean a limited number of revisions, which they'll have to hold to in order to not have it be infinite and to hold on. Mm-hmm. Generally for me, it's a first design direction with one or two revisions to that. So that'll be like sample slides or, again, design direction. And then a full build out with one to two revisions after that. Sometimes we'll go to three revisions, but here's where we negotiate and we play with scope and budget. If they're really looking to keep the budget down, then we say fewer rounds.
That's pretty close to what I do, depending on how much concepting has to be done up front and approval of a concept, which in itself can count as a round. I usually allow for proposed three rounds of planned revisions, our first draft feedback, second draft feedback, and then a final draft. So no feedback after that final. That's what I write into my written scope and timeline.
It's kind of a funny phrase, planned revisions.
You see, I know.
The idea is that I got all the information, let's design something. There should be no revisions, but Sandy's, I mean, it's the same for us. For TLC Creative, it's generally three revisions are included. We're planning on the client needing to make content revisions. Sometimes it's aesthetic, sometimes it's data. So we are planning it. I just don't call it planned revisions like you're pre-planning these. You know, the one thing I will call out, though, is our three revisions, which is the same thing, Sandy. They're written into the project scope. They're on the timeline. We're kind of allocating them out for the duration of the project. So everybody has a hopefully realistic view of how long this is going to take. But our revisions are per task. So a template design, the estimate's going to include three revisions for the template development. The presentation makeover in the same project is using the new template, but it includes three revisions of the presentation.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So the project actually has six revisions in the estimate, but it's three revisions per task.
I do the same thing.
Well, what about it? So maybe I'm just jumping ahead here, but what happens when the client has reached that number of revisions that were included?
Fist fights.
Thanks, Nolan.
So it just happened with me last week. The client.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, no, not a fist fight, but that's why all my clients are on the other side of the country.
Yep. Right out. It's easier that way.
So last week the client wanted a third revision. We had only contracted for two, and at first it was just a small thing, and I changed it. Then they came back with something else, and I called them on it. And what ended up being the case actually was they were really only asking for something fairly minor. But the larger thing was something we had actually missed ourselves in the first revision, but which they never brought to our attention. So once they pointed that out, it was clearly our mistake. And I'm not going to charge, I'm not going to count it as a round if we're fixing a mistake. So if we mess up on something, we'll do whatever we need to at any point to fix that if it's genuinely our mistake. In that case, it was.
So you're a really good guy.
Well,
no, it's that's right.
But yeah, this gets back to it. The client can change their mind, but they can't change it infinitely. That's the whole point of contract and rounds. You know, basically this, if we say two or three rounds, it says you can keep changing your mind two or three times, but that's it.
Yeah.
Right. Or you can, you know, fix typos or whatever. It's just to prevent the infinite, never-ending project.
So when a client asks me for a revision and we're beyond our planned revisions, I will say yes. I'll say sure, I'll make it. But
I would expect that from you, absolutely.
Yes, but then I'll say something like, I'll add it to my final invoice, I'll add the time, and it's likely to take an additional 3 hours for me to do this. Is that okay? And I get approval instantly to add it. I usually don't have them say no. You know, and if we're talking not major revisions, somebody comes back and, oh, we found that we need three more slides and they're simple slides. I'll say, yeah, I'll do it, but it's not in our scope.
Okay. So you will say, yes, I'll add it to my invoice because this is out of scope rather than just I'll add it to my invoice with sort of the unspoken, you should know that this is out of scope.
No, I may say something like because we didn't estimate it, but sometimes I might not even say that. They'll figure it out. It's part of our contract. Yeah. So,
I'd say the theory is the project invoice will be more and everybody should know that because you sent us three requests and we've done those and we said we were going to do three requests. Mm-hmm. I think the reality is communicating with the client, like you're doing, Sandy, finishing the project and sending the invoice, usually for the estimate amount. You know, it's like if it wasn't a big one, we just don't get to claim it. It's just kind of part of the industry. But I really think we should because we've now exceeded what the request was.
I think more often than not, I still end up coming in on budget. I must subconsciously slightly overestimate at each phase. And so when these extra edits come in, I can do them and still be okay.
Yeah. And I'm sure we've all been in situations where it's really not worth charging them for 15 minutes or a half hour. No. So, I mean, I've had some clients say, oh, just, you know, send me a bill. I'm like, no, it's going to take me more time and work to bill you for 15 minutes or a half hour. So just, you're a good client. You keep coming back. So fine. You
know, that's perfect. Just,
here's the change. Yeah.
So do you have any educational tips or strategies that you use with your clients to limit?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you have to have that conversation up front, or you should. And I think the big thing for me is asking for one point of contact, and that's specified in a contract or just verbally, and having that person package the feedback. So there might be a whole team providing feedback on their end, but I don't want to get emails from five different people. Just, you know, first round of revision, you gather all the feedback from the client, from your boss, from colleagues or whatever, and then give it all to me at once. So I'll often ask, who else needs to weigh in on this? Does the client, does your boss, like, are you the final arbiter of this? And sometimes that will reveal things, and then we'll have to adjust number of rounds of revision or timing or whatever.
You know, you say, and it's true, you know, we get feedback from a lot of people, but clients will often send an email for every suggestion they receive or they notice. Hey, I'm going through this slide 5. I think we need to do this. Email send. Hey, I'm still going through this slide 7. Okay, wait, we've only moved two things. Now I've got another email, but I've already, you know, but they were 20 minutes apart. So, you know, I just happened to jump in and start working on it. And so anyways, if someone sends a list of edits in email after email, I'll have a simple conversation with that person and say, hey, we need to consolidate your feedback. I really liked your phrase there, Nolan. We should package the feedback. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'll say we'll consolidate it, even if it means holding it for a day or so on your end, so we get a more comprehensive list and can count all of those as a single revision round versus using up all your revisions in a single day because you gave us 6 emails each, you know, an hour or two apart, and we went in, did our edits, saved it, and now it's a revision on our, you know, design log.
Have you ever been party to an email chain going back and forth where two clients are discussing things and you may not even realize it at first, because one client will say, all right, Nolan, you know, change the wording on this sentence. And then the other person will jump in on that chain and saying, maybe we should say it this way. And then—
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to go to your primary contact and say, please let me know when you have a final decision. I'll do whatever you want.
But. I'm with you guys. I mean, single resource, packaged, great word, Nolan. I don't have anything to add to that. It's perfect.
Yeah. That client I fired last week or the week before, yeah. One of their issues was that it would start with one, the primary contact would contact me, but then his other employees would pick it up later. But they were, which, you know, it's not ideal, but at least if the team is tight and everybody's on the same page, it's fine. But these other people, his other employees, were not on the same page and had other expectations. So I'd have to then go back and say, okay, but what do you want again? This is not what we discussed. And it was just a mess, and that kept happening. How do you prefer to receive revision edits?
In writing, I mean, preferably in writing, in a PowerPoint or the PDF file so they can mark those up. If someone sends a list of edits in an email, that can be a challenge, what you guys were just talking about right now. But here's what I face. It seems no matter what, when someone sends edits in an email, revisions in an email, the slide count will be off. I don't know what it is, but every single time. I haven't deleted it.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, I find myself hunting for the edits.
Totally get it. Yeah. Completely identify. A lot of times it's hidden slides and the PDF doesn't have the hidden slides.
Oh, that's kind of it. Exactly. Or you get something that says something, make this and this edit to the biotech slide.
Yeah.
you know, it's sometimes we are... We know.
And it's a biotech presentation.
It's a biotech Exactly. Which biotech slide? So that stuff like that is really, really weird. One way I like making edits is in real time, though, in collaborating in a webinar, not a webinar, but a WebEx kind of environment. They're looking at the screen and we're finalizing things. We're down to the wire. There's something exciting about that.
If we're talking PowerPoint, do you use the comments section? Do you prefer the built-in comments?
I like it when clients use the comments. I really do. Not many know about it. So when I send notes. Let's say I'm sending a presentation to somebody and I want to make comments. I don't put them in the comments because even if I say in the email, look in the comments for
they don't know
feedback. Right. They don't know.
So do you put like big, just free floating, like
notes.
Yellow or pink?
Yep.
Hot. Yep. Yep. Big.
We use pink. Green. Can't we have it. Green notes. Yep. Green.
Now I'm slowly coming around to the comments because I like the ability to check and reply to them. But I don't think in PowerPoint there's a way to see all comments at once, right? You just have to go from slide to slide.
PDF, you can see all comments at once.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So I love PDF. And generally I'm looking at PDFs of InDesign, so I don't get into the hidden slide thing. But I love PowerPoint PDFs commenting because you can filter and then as you go through and you check it and it disappears or it just hides it. And you can comment as well. And it's a nice way to sort of make sure you're hitting every note.
Yes.
I mean, if
we
I
actually
get
print
them,
email,
them
out, we'll do a print
yeah,
out.
If I get them in an email, I print them out and get my Sharpie out, right?
Exactly. Well,
all I was going to say is I love it because then I can go through and check off each item. Or if they
physically.
Yep, physically check it off. If they do email it to me, I will reply to that email, attach the file to it, and then make comments to every single item that they listed in the email. I will mark it mm-hmm. done. I will have a comment. So I love to be able to check it off.
I'm going to go with based on that. Again, revisions is a lot of communication. Client has to communicate to us. I prefer it in writing in some form as opposed to a conversation on the phone. And we have to somehow communicate back. It's not just this here done. I really think that's where a lot of designers kind of fall down is they just leave it to the client to, first of all, remember what it was they asked for. Mm-hmm. And second of all, to see, was it done? I'm really big on identifying where the change is. And I like PDFs because most people that use PDF comments know to put the little comment, little bubble next to what it is they're talking about. PowerPoint, even though you can do it, I get a lot of PowerPoints where the comment is just in the default upper left-hand corner. I'm like, wait, which right. bullet are you actually referencing? Now I'm spending a lot of time looking at it. So while I like PowerPoint comments, I don't think it's as robust of a user base to know how to use them most efficiently. I also am really big on Whipster. We use Whipster for all of our video proofs and their commenting scenario is just phenomenal where it'll actually let you draw boxes and put text, you know, identify things frame by frame. And a lot of times we'll do a PowerPoint exported as video, put it on Whipster and say, here, look at it here. Cause now you don't, it works really good.
Oh,
it's just another
that.
One.
Today. I should have done that. Oh
yeah. Okay. Really, really like their commenting and their ability to draw arrows and just kind of overlays and stuff like that. But yeah, again, in writing, absolutely. And if I can check mark it, because I always try and get a second designer, maybe our project coordinator, to be the person that verifies that some action was done on each one of them. It doesn't have to be like, hey, I don't like your design. It's more like, did you address this? Yes, in some way, good. Did you address this? Yes, in some way, good. So yeah, I love check boxes.
There's something satisfying about it. So have you ever been stuck on the design revision phase, any phase where the client just can't be satisfied? It's do over and do over.
Yeah, rarely, but it's happened.
Really? Wow.
A few years ago, I had a client that we just couldn't get on the same page with regard to what, quote, simple and clean, but not something that I could do myself was. And, you know, we just kept making it simpler and they said, I could do this. We made it more complicated. They said, it's not simple. So we parted ways before we even got to the build out. That was just in the design phase.
Wow.
I had a project. I feel like I might have complained about this before, but it seriously was well over a year and it was not that big of a project.
Wait, was it a year ago or the project was going for a year? The
project went over a year. It lasted from May to the following September, I think. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And as conscientious as we are, I know I could have fired them, but I couldn't do it. So I hung in there. I minimized every single minute. I know I invested a lot into it, but the CEO, who was very, very involved in it, just couldn't make a decision. And nor could he describe what he wanted. Usually I can get into someone's head and I can figure it out. when he said, I want it to be high tech, medical, la, la, la. And I come back with my interpretation of that and I'm way off. So then, no, we need to have a softer, it was just so, so painful.
I totally, we give people something to react to. Mm-hmm. We're going to interpret. What was your example there? Something high. We're going to create what we think is high tech for their industry or them. And sometimes we'll actually give them two options, but you know, people a lot of times can't describe what it is they want, but they can react to something. So we know you're talking about your earlier phrase, planned revisions. Like we know this isn't going to hit the mark, but at least maybe we'll get some direction based on it. Yeah. Sure. We're working on a project right now where we're doing that. Matter of fact, the whole first draft of the presentation, which was based, you know, me interpreting notes, got the feedback of, yeah, slides 2, which means the title slide was okay, through 28, and there was only 35 slides. Yeah, let's just scrap all those because we just need one slide because he's not really addressing that. And here's where you need to, like, oh, yeah, I totally missed the mark on that, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happens. So that became a revision, by the way. So the question is, what was it? Have we gotten stuck on a design where we just couldn't satisfy the client?
A phase, revision phase. Yes.
Revisions. Yes. Could we not come up with a revision that made every... Okay. So May, the first thing I'll say is we don't get this a lot on template projects. And I want to draw this example because I'm really proud of our workflow in building out templates because we do a lot of templates. We do all these, one-off templates for live events. So we generate a lot of templates more than when I talk to other designers, presentation designers, we're doing 2 and 3 times the amount of templates and they're true templates, but they're going to be used for one meeting and then they're gone. And we came up with a work phase that I think is really cool. We almost have it as an internal game. And I think I've talked about this before. And we ask the client to become the art director. Now we don't say it that way. They don't know it, but it's very difficult not to be happy with the design that you created. So for virtually every template project, we gather all the requests, we get all the project specs, and then we hand it off to 3 or 4 of our designers to each develop a concept. And a concept is not the template. It's just, here's what the look could be. Theme look, maybe a title slide and a content slide. Look, and they're not even real functioning. The client proof has the 3 to 4 background styling options. Each one has a different tone. Maybe they have different fonts. Maybe they have slightly different colors, or maybe they have dramatically different color schemes. We tell the client, here are some design directions. Please mix and match the options you like, and we'll pull that into the real template. So we've kind of turned the, hey, do you like this, into, hey, tell us which portions you like, and we're going to build it out that way. And man, we get...
Well, are they cutting and pasting? And
No. They're literally just telling, it'll literally say concept 1, you know, and then the theme slide and a content slide, and then concept 2. And they'll say, hey, I like the fonts in concept 2, but I really, really like the theme in concept 3. For the content slide, maybe try, you know, they give us the design direction. I wish I could do it on more projects.
So it's like a choose your own adventure, but doesn't that sometimes not work? I mean, you're mixing stripes and plaids.
We do have those conversations of, hey, you know, the reason those are separate, but you know what, for the most part, you know, cause some template projects used to be, you get into these discussions. Well, what if we go down this route? What if we go, well, we give them 3 or 4 different paths. It's been a really good solution.
And do you find that works better with these sort of one-off, you know, conference templates rather than like an organizational template that they're going to need to use for years and years?
Ironically, we didn't apply the same theory or workflow to corporate templates. It was only these one-offs.
Yeah.
About a year ago or so, we started applying it to corporate templates. And I'll tell you, it works really well. So we work with a couple of biomed companies that have really, really robust brand standards, and they're very, very narrow in what you're allowed to do. You're only allowed to use 4 shades of blue. Everything has to be on a grid, and the grid has to be this. It's like, wow, this is really, really limiting. Imagery has to be of this styling, this and that. What becomes fun at this point is we give it to 3 designers. We say, create 3 different looks. You know the corporate branding. This meeting is going to, or this division, we're going to treat like a meeting in that they want something unique. And even within very narrow parameters, you can come up with some unique looks. We actually got a compliment from this particular corporate client of ours. Their internal communications director came back to us in an email and said, this is fantastic. This is the fastest I have ever had a presentation design project, and it bled over into print design and everything else for the division, approved by any of our divisions. And it was really cool. It's like, hey, it works. So yeah, it can work is the answer. You know, the other side of that is I'd also say is if we had things where they just can't be satisfied, unfortunately, yeah, we've had those too. Although I do feel it happens in most situations is we provide a design, and that's when the client starts seeing that their vision does not match the project direction, and there's frustration. And usually it's not bad design as much as suddenly the end goal that they want to see isn't going to match where they want. And we just, you know, you can't satisfy that.
It's, well, I know that's, this isn't this, we're kind of getting off subject a little bit, but coming from the ad agency world, that's how we always delivered. I think it's easier to have someone make a decision when you give them choices. So yes. I usually go in with at least two different approaches, even for corporate templates.
Absolutely agree.
Yeah, we don't have to get into it. We talked about psychologically guiding them towards the right decision. Right,
absolutely. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we don't call it choices. We literally say, I mean, we don't say it up front, but we'll say we have said it like we're letting you play art director. I mean, that's our mentality. But mm-hmm. when we get into a conversation, instead of make a choice, we're like, we're letting you be an art director and decide what the direction is on this. Let us know what works best. Works great
because people send them a FedEx the day before with a hat that says art director. Put it on.
I was thinking more of the chair, you know.
There you go.
Yeah, people have a hard time disagreeing with their own choices, is where it is. Okay, how about this one? How about the total opposite? Have you ever just gotten it where on the first pass they go fantastic, no revisions to make, we're done?
Delivering first draft. Is that what
you're doing? Yeah, first draft done.
Recently, and it happened with at the same client, two different contacts. One was a Word document of all things, and the other was a presentation. Nailed it the first time. I couldn't believe it. I'm thinking, did they just throw it away?
Hopefully it was a flat rate project where you just say, fantastic, we're billing the full amount. We're done.
I put a lot of work into the first draft. It was pretty awesome.
That's cool. Nolan?
Yeah, sure. Sometimes. I mean, I tell clients, you know, when we're talking about revisions and they're like, oh, I don't know if two is going to be enough. I'll say, you know, we're pretty good at what we do. And, you know, depending on the project, we like to think we hit the bullseye, you know, pretty close on the first try. And, you know, sometimes it's our work is so good and sometimes it's the client doesn't care that much depending on the project. At the end of the day, I don't care either way as long as, you know, we get through it more quickly.
You know, on that train of thought, sometimes it's the project where we're like, oh, you know, maybe it's like a design or a layout or even a video project. Like, I know this is going to be perfect. This, they're going to love this. Revision, 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 revision. And then it's other projects like a slide where we have absolutely no idea what the content or the message to the audience really is. So we just kind of go into design mode and go, maybe this would be what it's talking about. And, you know, we just completely guessing. I mean, it's good design, but we're just guessing. And the client goes, perfect. How can that be perfect? We have no clue what it is we just created. So, yeah.
Have you ever had an end client? So the client has a client and your client is so fed up with their client that they're just like, yeah, fine, whatever. Great. It's great. I just need to give them something.
We deal with that way, you know, because we're hired by production companies and internal design divisions to work with the end client. So we're just, you know, we're a subcontractor for the whole project a lot of times. We treat everybody as our own, you know, every end client is a thing. But yeah, we get in the middle of things all the time. We've done entire projects where we're going round and round and round on maybe it's the template design, going round and round and round. They're like, oh yeah, we'll send this one to the client. I'm like, wait, you've been giving all the feedback? You're the production company. You're not an art designer. You're not an art director. You're literally just hiring us to be the designer and you just played art director to your client. And yeah, it happens. That was kind of negative.
Troy, so you've got a bunch of designers, and I have to assume they're often working on the same file. Somebody's making a revision to something somebody else created. You know, talking about project management, do you have any rules for helping with that, setting up files, or just keeping?
Yeah,
keeping consistency.
It's a big deal. Okay, so here's the easiest thing to do. We just talked about how we have to communicate with our clients. Let them know how everything's going to work. We're doing this, that. We also communicate internally a lot. And for a project, it actually gets pretty cool because it's not always us. Now, we have a very robust set of corporate standards and here's the guidelines. And even we had a team meeting yesterday. No joke. probably 12 minutes of this 45-minute meeting was us talking about the formula for how we record time entries so that everybody's consistent. So we suddenly realized that a few people had kind of gone off on a slightly different tangent. So yeah, we have a lot of standardization in how we report stuff, but for a project, the lead designer sets the styling rules that everyone needs to align to. So that designer is going to take a first pass at the key elements. Charts are going to use this. You know, maybe it's the axis styling. You know, there is no vertical Y line. We want to use charcoal gray, you know, for the call outs. They're going to set the rules. We let every lead designer become the rule setter. And then specific sections or needs are assigned. And everybody has to, you know, kind of go, oh, I'm not going to make my own design. I'm going to just make it work with it. So we have a lot of communication. We have a very good project management system. Everybody knows what they're responsible for. You know, sometimes we don't use our project management system. We'll jump over to OneNote for like a big project that has a lot of moving parts. It's just hard to read through the project management system commenting. We'll create almost an Excel-like grid that says what's accomplished and not for bigger projects that are kind of a little faster moving or a little more complex so that there's collaboration and the ability to communicate easily.
Yeah, I don't have the problem with multiple designers, but there are times where I will allow a client to collaborate. And how we do that varies, but a recent example is using Dropbox. We had a fast deadline approaching, and while it's not like OneDrive collaboration or Google Slides collaboration, we were able to go in, work on a single file, let each other know when we were out so that the other could get in and make changes. It worked really, really well.
Yeah, one of my biggest frustrations in subcontracting InDesign to other designers is even though you ask for everything to be styled and footnotes to be done properly and charts to be done this way, I find that every designer does things slightly differently. And I think maybe it's more so is the case with InDesign because there's so many options and ways of doing things, more so than PowerPoint. But
I totally disagree. There's good ways and there's bad ways. We set the good. That was a conversation I had with another designer, and that was what they told me. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Thank you.
So you think there's more ways or more different ways to do things in PowerPoint than InDesign?
No, I think InDesign you can do things more. But I'm literally quoting a conversation with somebody we were working with. It was an internal corporate designer, and they pretty much said that what we were doing was wrong. I was like, but we're accomplishing the same thing, and I actually think setting – character styles is a better idea than doing what you're anyways.
I'll never forget the creative director. I think it was of Sprint or AT&T or one of those big guys or whatever. We were doing presentations for them years ago, and he insisted that all images should be no more than 72 dpi because that's all that PowerPoint can handle. And so I put in a 72 dpi image, and I said, look, it's blurry when you go in slideshow mode. And he said, no, that's correct. I said, what? But it's blurry. And on the next slide, it's higher resolution. He said, 72 is all PowerPoint can handle. Please do that. I was like, okay. I mean, literally, I've never seen anything like it. And he just had somebody told him at one point.
It's such an equation to go down that path. I mean, DPI is based on size, which is relative to final image, which is relative to how Microsoft interprets.
I mean, I try not even to get into that. I just said, which one of these two slides do you think looks better?
Yeah.
I couldn't get through them.
But I totally agree. InDesign has got way more options and ways to accomplish all good things. Okay, let me do this. I want to wrap up with a slightly not positive aspect of revisions. See, that was a positive way to say that.
Good spin.
It also may be the best stories of the day. So here it is. Revision requests, I think, directly relate to file versions. Who has a story or stories about revision requests overlapping file versions and the project flow just going awry? Or maybe the awry came... I just totally knocked my microphone. Hopefully everybody didn't hear that.
Not at all.
Got hand movements happening. Maybe the awry came up after the design was done and suddenly the updates were found to be missing because they got lost in an overlapping version of the file during some revisions. Does that make sense? I mean, there could be version disasters.
Oh,
Troy, it sounds like you have a story to tell.
Well, oh, I'm just waiting for anybody else's. I've got lots of them. But
last minute name changes and award ceremonies. To me, it's so.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Every single time. And I kind of get a little snippy because I know what's going to happen, but I try to stop it from happening in advance. I say, this is really important. You're calling people's names up. You have to have the information correct. You can't be making last minute changes. This is so important. You're going to embarrass yourself. You're going to embarrass the awardee. It happens almost every single time. And can you tell it frustrates the dickens out of me?
I wasn't actually thinking of that. Oh. And I just had it happen last week. I won't say the name, but Rigo could be spelled with an E or an I. And I chose one because I said, make his first name there. He got up on stage and goes, hey, they misspelled my name. First time anybody had ever seen it because they said, just do it. You know, it was a verbal. I made the call on how to spell the name and nobody approved it. And I asked, and yeah, it's horrible. Luckily that presenter was very gracious about it, but it happens.
What? A lot.
Okay.
That's version control.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I call it version control. And our rule is that either we control the current version of the file or you, the client, control the version of the file. We are not simultaneously working on the same version. It's a one or the other. Side note. True collaboration, like you were talking about, Sandy, yes. And I'm going to say on a single PowerPoint file, which is multi-authoring, is a topic we have slated for the presentation podcast for later this year. And this is the scenario we're not talking about, where multiple people are working on the same file literally at the same time. I have bad stories about this because we've had things just go disastrous. If it's a new client, I think we encounter this more. And it can really impact the hours of design we log. You know, it's a situation that comes up. We're manually now comparing our version of the presentation to the version they just sent back because the client decided to go ahead and make some changes, but they won't tell us what they are. And, you know, finding that new content, updating it so we have a single version in sync, that's a lot of time. It's just manually doing stuff. I could talk about the story of a sales meeting. 2-day sales meeting, and the sales numbers were going back and forth, you know, as they're often doing. And somebody worked on a file. We grabbed their version. They said, here it is. Well, they did their updates, but they didn't update all of them. So suddenly all the sales numbers were literally wrong by millions. Mm. It was a bad scenario because they were using old, like last year's numbers hadn't been updated. Well, I didn't know to look for those. They just said, here's the final. I'm like, okay, great. We'll use this. We had another great one. We updated the color scheme because we were working on a presentation at the same time the company was going through a rebrand. They changed out one of their blues. So, you know, we went through it and I'm like, oh, we're kind of working on the template while working on this presentation. It's not the best way to go through this. We update it. They end up giving us a new file. We keep source formatting because who has time to look at it all? Needless to say, the presentation had the wrong blue applied throughout it and people got upset. So things happen. And then in addition to like something just totally wacky, like corporate color blue being changed and nobody noticing it till it's on a screen and everybody going, hey, why is that person's portion of the presentation so much different? And it was different. You know, how about this? It's usually you get the same version number back from the client and then you mistakenly take their version and you save over your version, which has just got hours of design work that was just literally overwritten. Arg. That's calm and passive. As I think about this, my blood level.
Yeah, I know. Blood, I can feel it. Gosh. And my breathing is going up. This is a little bit different. It was 100 slides. I mean, a deck, it's rare that happens anymore, but it was 100 slide deck. The client had approved the first draft. We had discussed what the changes should be, and I was working on the second draft. And I was nearing the completion of that, and she sent me an edited first draft file.
Yeah, so you had to totally start over because it would take as long to get it.
Well, do you know what I did though? I was literally getting ready to send out the second draft. I said, thank you. Here's the second draft that I just completed. Will you make your edits to this draft? Because I won't be able to, you know, I mean, I said it as eloquently and nicely as possible, but I could not possibly find all her edits. I mean, what if she changed an A to an O? It was ridiculous.
Exactly.
Right.
There's not really, Microsoft Word does a pretty good, what do you call it when you can track changes?
Yes.
Track changes are pretty good in Word, PowerPoint, not so much.
No.
And Yeah. So, I mean, all of revisioning is communication to me. We're going to communicate who has the version and who owns it. We're going to communicate that, yes, we've received your revisions. We're going to communicate, here's the new version, here's what we implemented. It's a big deal. And yeah, I'm sure everybody out there listening has got a, oh my gosh, story you wouldn't believe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we would believe. We are as much an organizer and communicator as we are designer. We organize, or at least maintain, order of the files, the design requests, and checking off each project need is implemented. We communicate with our clients the rules of design work to protect them, oftentimes from themselves, just like Sandy's example of the whole file coming back. And you're like, wait a minute, we need to protect you from yourself to get this done. Our tools for accomplishing all this are managing the number of revisions for each project and assuring the versioning of project files is clear to avoid costly mistakes.
Well said.
Okay, let's do some fun pro and tech tips. Nolan, you're up first.
So my tech tip is a quick one, AirPlay mirroring of FaceTime using Apple TV. I'm sure other people do this, but we were getting tired of holding the phone with grandma, with, you know, moving them around. So I hooked up an old Apple TV, which wasn't connected to my our big TV set in our living room. You mirror FaceTime with the TV, you pop the phone right under the TV, and then you have a big sort of big brother encompassing the room. So you don't have to hold the phone and the kids can see grandma big on the screen. It doesn't work great in landscape, but still vertical on a big screen TV is still better than the tiny little phone. So that's my tech tip.
I am totally surprised that smart TVs haven't added a camera for that.
Yeah, it is surprising after all these years.
How about you, Trey?
I am going to use, okay, so I'm going to do a total PowerPoint one because I just had to do this recently. Have you ever used PowerPoint has the built-in optimized videos. You can go under, you insert a humongous 3 gig video. You can knock it down to 1080 or whatever resolution the preset resolution. So did you know that if you take a video and you trim it, so you only want to play, like the last 2 minutes of a 10-minute video.
You trim it in PowerPoint.
You trim it in PowerPoint. Uh-huh. So, when you go to the slide, it's only going to hit it. Now, I actually don't want to use the video in PowerPoint. I just want a video that is trimmed. I want a 2-minute version of this video. So I'll set the trim up in PowerPoint. You can hit optimize. And then if you right click and say save video out or go into the zip file and pull it out, what that does is it actually creates another version of the video with just that little portion. So you can use PowerPoint as your video editor in kind of a sneaky little cool tip way.
Does it include the fades then if you added those?
I'm silent because I don't know the answer. I'm trying to think it through. Ooh.
I'm going to try that. Huh. I'm going to test that. I'm working on something right now. Not this second, but when we're done.
Sandy, what do you got?
Well, I have this little app for my Android. I know it's also available for the iPad, so iPhone. It's called Snapseed. It's a photo editing app. And I cannot believe the quality of photos that come out of it. All of our phones these days take super photos.
But yeah.
The ability of these editing tools to blur your backgrounds, darken your backgrounds, spotlight your faces. They're just so sophisticated. And Snapseed is a really nice, simple tool that's free that I would recommend for anyone.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional design agency. Check out us online, tlccreative.com. We have a PowerPoint presentation blog, thepowerpointblog.com. And we regularly post related photos, kind of the background happenings of our studio at facebook.com/TLC Creative Services.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as PPTWiz.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if your organization is looking for on-site training in data viz or presentation, give me a call.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.